This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 27th of June, 2023. Another down session in the U.S. Markets yesterday. We had especially the big mega cap names and AI-linked names that were having a rough session. We saw Goldman downgrading Tesla to neutral from buy, citing the shares' strong advance and the price cutting for new cars as reasons for that. So Tesla was down some 6% on the session. But I guess the remarkable thing, Peter, to my mind at least, is it's been a pretty orderly correction, a pretty steep one percentage-wise. But again, it's, you know, this is after a very, very significant advance. And things like the VIX are showing that there's just not a lot of worry in the market. So it just feels like a bit of air coming out of what was a very strong move coming into this little correction here.
Yeah, exactly. The long end of the yield curve in the U.S. very well behaved. The forward curve on the VIX still in contango, very well behaved. Also on the spot level, the VIX index itself, as you mentioned, it's. I think there's a lot of corners and indicators on the equity market signaling that this is for now at least a calm retreat. But I think a price action, what you saw yesterday with Tesla, is interesting because we had that gap higher a couple of weeks ago, U.S. trading session. We haven't moved into that gap area yet in the S&P 500, but the Tesla's price action yesterday almost closed that gap. At least it went into the gap territory. Maybe that's a forewarning or a signal that the S&P is headed that way as well. But for now, it's quite orderly. And if you look at the different parts of the market that moved yesterday, if you take the classic industry groups, it was software, it was media and entertainment companies, car makers that were down because of Tesla. The good industry groups that were actually advancing was real estate. Real estate was up more than 2%. I'm still struggling to find the actual news driver of that move, so I'll have to keep looking. And then transportation and energy stocks were also higher. And I think the energy stocks itself are of course responding to this new rebound attempt in crude oil. And if we look at the slide 3, John, something that is also signaling this calm, and we just feels like the equity market is just in some waiting position. You can see the S&P 500 and the Stock 600, the leading index here in Europe. The earnings estimates 1 year forward continues to go higher from here. So I think it signals that we have these rising expectations going into the Q2 earnings season. And I think it's one of those things that I'll be watching. Can we really deliver in the technology sector against these very high expectations? And I think it's all about getting these extra data points. To me, it's still, that's the big unknown. And I know you also said that in the internal call, John. It's to what extent or when will the bond market begin to really price a different inflation picture than the narrative they are holding on to right now?
Yeah, and I'll get to the bond market. We have Altea here in the studio as well. I'll get to the bond market in just a moment. A very brief roundup of the action in FX. We saw overnight the People's Bank of China setting the reference rate or fix for the renminbi stronger. So it looks like they want to cap this sell-off or cap dollar CNH or support the currency with this kind of move. The second day in a row, they set the fix stronger. So I would suspect, all of the things being equal, this would lead to some resistance for dollar CNH in a period of consolidation. At the margin, supports the dollar bearish case. We didn't see that strong action and in feeding into things like the Aussie dollar, however, which is trading around a really key territory, 67 area in the 200-day moving average ahead of the CPI report later from Australia. Also for Canada, the CPI and the Canadian dollar has really been on a tear lately as the strongest currency among G10 currencies. I would suppose, you know, we talked about all the quiet in the equity market. We've seen a pretty decent consolidation lower in sentiment there. The dollar's gotten a little bit out of that, but not very much. And things like a euro dollar, which is now trading above where it was after those very ugly PMIs were released on Friday last week. It just doesn't seem to be a lot of energy in the market. And to my mind, that leads to dollar weakness. So we need to see the energy picking up on the negative side to get dollar strength back in. Could be in something like the U.S. 10-year yield breaking free to the upside or some very weak data. But that's sort of over to you, Altea, because we're waiting for something to happen on the U.S. yield curve that's new, and especially something to happen at the longer end, those 10-year yields have been in one of the most sort of tight ranges for several weeks that we've seen in a very long time. So what are you looking at next for the next sort of trigger point in the U.S. Treasury market?
Well, John, what I'm looking at is at the ECB Forum of Central Banking in Sintram that started today and has several central bank speakers among Federal Reserve, Bank of England, BOJ. And, you know, like after the rally that we have seen yesterday following the IFO expectations, I believe that there is plenty of downsides for bonds at this point of time because they have to catch up with interest rate expectations. And right now I'm taking you on slide number 5. There I put a chart with the 2-year yields. As you can see, it's still trading below 5%, but the market expectations is for the Fed fund rate then to rise to 5.5%. Now it looks like it's priced at a fall. But basically with the Federal Reserve hiking once or twice, it's almost impossible that the 2 years will remain at the current level and needs to rise toward that 5%. So in a nutshell, John, what I think is that the long-term yields are quite pinned down and will continue to be pinned down until the Federal Reserve decides to disinvest bonds under its balance sheet, and the front part of the yield curve will continue to move higher, and that will translate in deeper inversion in the yield curve.
All right, so possibly even exceeding that, what was it? There was a single day, I think it was minus 106 basis points or something like that.
It was minus 108.
108, but, okay, yeah.
So we are not far away from
not
that.
Not far away, yes. And of course, to get a 2-year yield at those low levels, it's because out the curve, out into 2024 and further forward, the market is pricing in those Fed cuts. We'll see where we are at that point in time. And you've also got a slide with us looking at the corporate bond market. It's been pretty quiet. I do look at one indicator occasionally. It was all the way down to 4%. The Bloomberg's high yield spread, I think it's expanded 30 basis points back higher, but it just hasn't really been sending off any alarm bells. And I think that's your general message as well. There are no big alarm bells in corporate credit, broadly speaking.
Yeah, but there is something that is changing because last week, for the first time in 6 weeks, we have seen the spread between high-yield bonds and investment-grade bonds widening for the first time. Basically, this starts to ring some alarm bells because I'm going to take you on slide number 6. And as you can see, since the March SVB crisis, that spread between junk and high-grade corporates started to fall back below 300 basis points at the level that it was trading before the COVID crisis. However, right now, we are in a completely different environment from the pre-COVID because pre-COVID in 2019, we were seeing a Federal Reserve that was cutting rates and that was favorable for risk. And we have seen junk spreads tightening considerably. Right now, the Fed hiking cycle has not ended yet. And what we can assume is that junk spreads will continue to widen. And it's more alarming when we look at the yield, at the interest rate that these bonds will need to refinance themselves. Right now, junk corporate bonds offer a coupon of around 6%. If they refinance themselves, they will need to refinance at a rate around 7.5% and 8%. The good news is that this year there are not many maturities in the junk bond space, so refinancing will not be an element that will drive defaults. But the real risk here is that as corporate spreads continue to widen, they will limit financial flexibility in cash-strapped companies.
Yeah, of course, the spread is one thing, but when these companies were rolling their debt at, let's say, 3%, 4%, if that was the spread to treasuries yielding essentially zero, back during the pandemic years, 2020 and 2021. Yeah, then the next time around, that several hundred basis point spread to a 5% is a whole new ballgame yield-wise and absolute yield terms. So a critical point there for corporate credit and traditionally something you always look to as well for the next timing of the next recession and when companies are being stressed. All right, let's go to the earnings front, Peter. We highlighted Carnival, I believe we did yesterday in any case. You said this morning's call that they pretty much reported in line with expectations, but the stock was quite thoroughly punished. So any thoughts on that and then what you're looking at today?
Yeah, so it was punished 8% during the session, and it was quite a, you can argue that why can it fall when it actually the company exceeds expectations, both revenue and operating income, and it actually increased its fiscal year outlook for operating income before depreciation and amortization. The only explanation, of course, is that the market had even higher expectations than what was baked into the analyst estimates. And I think it a little bit of it goes back to what Altea just talked about with the credit quality. And one of the fears I think that could be lurking underneath the surface in U.S. credit, potentially also here in Europe, is that this expectation of low interest rates, low inflation, as long as the eye could see, because of demographics, yada yada, we have all these structural issues we've talked about endlessly on this podcast for years. If that narrative was strong, then maybe a lot of companies saw the low interest rates as an opportunity to increase their debt load. But as your finance students would know, the Mugliani equation or thinking about it is that there is a shareholder maximization point. So it makes sense to increase your debt leverage to a certain point. It's also the reason why Apple and Google and these very big technology companies over the years have increased their debt load, because in corporate finance parlance, it didn't make any sense to not have the debt. But with the rising interest rates, and Carnival being a very good example, they were hit because of the pandemic, of course. So it's an unfortunate situation for them. But they have a net debt to EBITDA leverage of more than 6 times, and it has a B credit rating, as we talked about yesterday. And you have Walgreens, which is reporting today. Not exactly the same story, but then again, a little bit similar, actually. They have $45 billion in net debt, and they have the capacity to pay on their interest. But if you look at the EBITDA expected for next year, it's $6.2 billion on $45 billion. Net debt level. So that's again another company that is very stretched, and you have to begin wondering if those interest rates are not coming down and they refinance over the coming years, and you have also the rising input costs from wages, and then you have the higher financing costs, could potentially set off some weakness in across the corporate sector where they did too much leverage. But otherwise, so we will be watching Walgreens. I'm not very impressed by this company. They have done really horrible in the past couple of years. They losing or falling behind the general price level increases, the inflation, and the higher wage input costs are also pressuring their margins. So it's really looking ugly, I think, for this company. And then Micron Technology is the big one we will follow tomorrow when they report.
All right. As mentioned by Altea, we have this ECB Centra forum going on today and tomorrow. So you can see the list of some of the central bankers out speaking today on slide 8 on the macro calendar highlights. Couple of Bank of England profiles, President Lagarde speaking basically as we're recording this, or just about to, and Bank of Canada, Norges Bank. So could we get some interesting messages there? I may be most curious to hear Norges Bank, the governor, out speaking later today. And then, as mentioned, Canadian CPI up today, Australian May CPI up in Asian hours, and a couple of interesting U.S. data points. So the new home sales, again, boosted by the irony, as we mentioned yesterday, that because of very high mortgage rates, the existing home supply is weak. People don't want to buy a new house and have to finance it at these high levels. They're happy to stay put with their very cheap financing they rolled into during the pandemic years. More interesting potentially is that U.S. consumer confidence number. Past cycles to me suggest that as the economy is materially beginning to weaken, you start to see the present situation component of consumer confidence coming off as a sort of coincident indicator to yes, the labor market weakening, et cetera. So we've seen a couple of labor market points, mostly just the jobless claims is showing some slack in developing in the labor market. But I would need to see an ugly present situation reading. That's not to say I predict one, but we just have not had anything, no weakness at all in that present situation component. It's been stuck above 145, which is a high level for the last 7 months with very little change. The expectations part of that has come off badly and does coincide with things like the yield curve slope and is suggesting some sort of stored up anticipation of an incoming recession at some point. But the actual is it here or not would be a deteriorating present situation component there. Rest of the week, as we've highlighted, some CPI data Thursday and Friday with the Germany, Eurozone, and U.S. reporting various interesting inflation levels. And yeah, with that, it's going to be a wrap for today. Let's see if the energy levels pick up in this market, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.